I've been doing a series on my own Monday night programme, 10 o'clock, Radio Ulster and Radio Foyle, What I Wish I'd Known When I Was 25, and basically any advice or information you would give to yourself when you were that age. Recently, I was talking to the man who keeps her country, keeps her lit, the one, the only, Mr. Hugo Duncan.
When I was 25, I was a married man. I had one child. I was in a band. I had gone through the band scene. I had a number one hit at 25. I come over the top of that. I was on the crest of a wave for a while, and now the wave was starting to get back into the sea again, and I was going a different direction altogether. And it was a time that the future didn't matter at all. It was just you lived each day for the day, and I got carried away in a lot of different directions. It was in that particular time from the, maybe when I was 25, that would have been 1975, that would have been into the, I probably started to take a few drinks at the time too as well. So there was nothing very important happening in my life as far as I was concerned, only the alcohol at that time. And I enjoyed it, and I let a lot of things that were very precious to me slip away. Just disregarded everything and gone out and have a drink at night and going out and play at the weekend and getting a few bob and away back into the bar during the week. So I was going through a sort of a limbo as far as recording. Nobody really wanted me to do anything at that particular time, so I was in limbo.
In hindsight, things can seem very different, but what would you say to yourself? What advice would you give to yourself when you're in the middle of all that?
If I had got myself on a day that I wasn't taken away by some other spirit, and I don't mean the Holy Spirit,
yes.
But if I had come on a day like that, I think the first thing I would have said was, look at your family, and then look at your life, and draw a line down the middle of the page and put the pros and cons. And I would say at that stage there was a lot of cons and very little pros, you know, and there was very little happening. And just try and stop for a moment.
Yeah.
Stop and just take note of where you're going and what you're going on, who you're going to be maybe hurting, but not only that, but whose lives are dependent on you.
So you mean your family?
Yeah.
And people around you?
Yeah. I get caught up in the glamour of being out on stage.
Did you realise at the time that the drinking and the way things were going, did you realise that there was a problem?
Nobody does either.
And when did that start to dawn on you? And
I would say about 83, 82, 83.
And what was that made you think there's something not right?
I was going through a health problem at the time too, and I had a bowel complaint, which is, I think they pronounce it diverticulitis, but at that time I thought it was cancer, and I was going through so much. And you know, when you're going through that stage, you always come up with the worst. Then I was getting very, very ill sometimes after having a two or three good days, you know, that kind of way. I remember getting to a stage and saying to myself, like, I've no one to show for this at all. I'm going nowhere, and you were in the toilets, and you were sick, and you were this, and you were that. And I said, if I get over Christmas, I will go off the drink. And I got off the drink, and after Christmas, maybe about a month or two after Christmas, I went home one night, and I had no keys to the front door with me. So I knocked the door. Her inside came downstairs, and she looked at me straight in the face, and she said to me, what's wrong with you? And I says, no, I just forgot my keys. But she says, you're sober. I says, sure, I'm trying to go off the drink. And she looked at me straight in the face the way I'm looking at you now, and she turned away and walked up the stairs. She walked up. She didn't believe I could do it.
Did you believe you could do it? Did you think you would come out the other end of this?
I'd be one of these people, Vinny, if I made a sort of a commitment, I would try to get through with it. And what happened was, I got a week over me. I got 2 weeks over me. I got 3 weeks over me, then I got a month. Nobody can be told when to go off the drink. Unless you have a firm purpose of amendment yourself, you can't do it. When I got to the month, then I said to myself, if I take a drink now, I've wasted that month. So then I got to 2 months. The finishing line that was in front of you all the time, and you headed for that finishing line, and you know, you went down there, and then you got there.
And did it get easier?
It did get easier as it went on, but I met people. I remember being off the drink for a year, and I remember being out one night with a man who was off the drink for 10 years, and I was standing up at the bar chatting to the boys and them drinking away, and me having a Coke there, and he wouldn't come up near the bar at all. But when I came off the drink, I was weaned off the drink working in bars. I sang in bars, I sang in hotels, sang in lounge bars, everything, and I was always around drink.
Want to jump forward. So we've gone from being around 25 years old to being around, let's say, when you started at Radio Ulster. How long have you been here?
I got in here, I actually started in Radio Foyle about the late 80s, doing one 50-minute program. I stood in for Sean Donald Hardy, God rest him, and Don was away on holidays for 5 weeks, and I stood in. And they asked me back then to do a 50-minute program once a week, and then they asked me back to do two 50-minute programs. And then I got invited to do an afternoon, no, an evening show here in Radio Ulster. And I used to go on at 8 o'clock. And then it was the following September, I got a phone call to say this phone call never happened. Would you be interested in an afternoon programme? And I said, what? I said, the capital's worked.
So and, what would you say to yourself back then, if you could talk in your ear? Because that's the kind of phone call someone gets maybe once or twice in their lifetime.
Yeah. I just, you know, I was over the moon. I was actually going down to do a programme on Radio Foyle. I said, surely, would you come up and see Anna Carr? So I went up to see her and she said, would you do the afternoon slot from 1:30 to 3? And she said, we only want you to care ticket for 6 months. My birthday's at the end of March.
So I said, that worked out all right.
You can put the P45 and say the birthday card. I got the job and...
And you're still there.
I think they forgot about me. I'm still there.
Well, like, it kind of brings me on to my next question. I think, and I'm counting myself in this, when they gave me the Monday night programme, the first thing I thought when they said, here's a programme for you, was, when are they going to take this away?
Yeah.
So straight away, there's that kind of anxiety, a little bit of nerves, a little bit of what if. Is there anything you would say to yourself, and you know, when that started, maybe even your first gig,
would you
say, don't worry, because you see, in years to come, you'll still be going strong, and there'll be a nation of an army of followers.
I had it for 6 months, and I knew I had it for 6 months. And I remember then, just after the turn of the year, there was an item in the Sunday papers that BBC were dumb and down. See, I came in here with no education, no nothing, no diction, no pronunciations, none at all, go my way. I was actually, you know, I shouldn't have been here.
And, says who, though?
Hey,
says
well,
who?
And saying a lot of people in here. And, you know, it's still up until very recently and still goes on that a lot of people would think my program was absolutely bottom, you know.
So would you say to yourself back then, be more confident, be more confident in yourself, your program?
No,
what
I never
you
thought
can do?
Of that. No, I never thought about being confident, but I just went ahead and I didn't worry about figures and how I'm coming in, because I knew it's 6 months, so at the 6 months I'm going anyway. So you don't take nothing for granted, and you go on there. I go on every afternoon, I have a bit of crack, and I take to mind that there's a lot of people sitting at the house there, and they might be there, they can't get out for all different reasons. Could it be physical, medical, it could be depression, anything at all. They're sitting in the house, they can't get out.
You're their window. Bad.
So we're going in there and we have to lift that. And so I try to lift it. And a lot of people say to me, you know, a boy came up to me one day and he says, Hugo, I listen to your program every day. He says, every day, he says, that crack's good. He says, but you do tell a load of shh. But he says, my mommy's got cancer. He says, and you make her laugh every day. So that was great.
See, you wouldn't get that.
And I met a wee woman last week, and they asked me to go up to meet her in the hospital, and went up, and she was going through a very difficult time, and she was in her 80s, and she was very, very far down, and she was going through a tough time. And I went up to the room, and her daughter brought me up to meet her, and I went in to meet her, and she said, Mommy, I brought somebody up here to meet you. And she opened her wee eyes, and she looked over, and she had the loveliest eyes and a beautiful smile. And she looked, and she gave me a smile. And I said, don't you forget, your Uncle Hugo loves you. And she looked at me, and the first word she says, will you play a request for me on the radio? See?
Hugo, I want to end on, we've kind of gone full circle here, because we've gone to when you're in your 25s to a bit later on to the current day. And I've read articles on you and looking for your dad. And,
yes.
And the issues around that. And it's such a huge topic. I don't want to do it a disservice by not giving you lots of time to talk about it.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to ask you is almost your advice to somebody else that maybe finds themselves now, or maybe reflecting back, in a similar position where they have that kind of question over their parents. And
well, most people know I was born into a one-parent family. And we, Susan and myself, we lived our life together. And I was 20 on the 26th of March. I was married on the 2nd of April, a Thursday later. And the following Thursday, I was lying praying under my mummy's ear in the hospital. She died. And I had never met my father. I'll tell them one thing not to do. Never go to meet your father if you've never met him before with drinking you.
Right. For people that look at it, and maybe not as much today, but years ago there was a negative thing over being a one-parent family, and some
yes.
people find it difficult whether you are that other parent or you are the child. Yeah. So what would you say to them?
To be a one-parent family way back in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, you know, there was that stigma about it.
Yeah.
You know, she's not married, you know, this kind of carry on. And it's difficult. And I think it gives you something to work for too as well. You know, get up there and anything comes your way, take it in the chin. Because times you try to hide from it, but there's no point in hiding from it. It's there in front of you. I went up to meet my father and had a few drinks taken. And I'm sorry now, I did. And I met him then. After that, I went into the house that day. I didn't meet him then, and he didn't want to talk to me at the beginning. Then back up again, went into the house, and I just said, "The only thing I'm up looking to see are you, my father." And he just nodded his head and said, "Yes." And I got to know his daughter Marianne since then, and you know the whole lot. And it's nice, and she has two children as well. But I remember when he died, I went up to the wake, and I was standing at the bottom of his coffin, and I stood there I don't know how long I stood. And I was looking into the coffin, and there's so many, what if? There were so many questions I was asking myself. And, you know, I didn't know him. I didn't know him. And you've seen people coming in, and they see me stand there, and, you know, they wouldn't say nothing to me, but they looked, and they would sit down, you know, chatting away, you know. And even when I went to the burial, myself, my wife, my daughter went up to the burial, it was the same thing at the graveyard. You know, people were saying, that's fine, all this kind. And it was sad that way, you know. I always maintain, if you know who your parent is, go and I would go and check it out. Maybe I'm giving the wrong advice to some people, because you see, you can't put all situations into one basket. You know,
what applies to you wouldn't necessarily apply to somebody else. That's right. Everything's very different.
But I'm sorry I didn't go earlier on, because the first time I met him, I had drink taken. The second time I met him, he had Alzheimer's. And the third time I went, he was in the coffin. So I would say, try and get some kind, even... You see, when my mother died, I was just married, a young teenager. I wasn't really interested, but just turned 20. And I never asked any questions. I knew he was a cobbler in Strabane. And I knew my ma was there, and she was only 4'10" or 11". She was so small, and she had size 2 shoes, and you could hear her coming from beds with the wee heels clipping. But, you know, these are great memories, but I have no memories of him. And yeah, anybody out there that's in the same situation, don't let it go. And, you know, it's like young singers come to me and they say to me, I've got an offer of a job, I've got a great job as it is, but I've got an offer of a job to join a band and the money's going to be less. I said, go for it, because if you don't, you'll regret it later on down the line.